Senate Resources is called to order. The time is 3:40. It's March the 16th. We do have a quorum to conduct business consisting of Senator Huggins, Stevens, French, Wagner, Wilikowski, and myself, McGuire. We have one item on the agenda today, Senate Bill 4, Coastal Zone Management Program by Senator Donnie Olson. We have numerous people who have signed up both online and in person to testify, so I'm going to use the 3-minute meter today, not to be rude to anyone or to discount your testimony. If you have additional comments after your 3 minutes are up that you'd like to submit in writing, I'd be happy to make them a part of the record. So with that, we'll have Senator Olson come up and tell us about Senate Bill 4.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. I went ahead and introduced Senate Bill 4, which is essentially to establish a coastal policy board to exercise authority over development projects in the coastal zones of Alaska. To date, there seems to be no avenue of compromise on this feature of legislation. You either want the authority and the power concentrated in one agency in the Department of Natural Resources, or you want it shared with local district residents and three other state commissioners. Senate Bill 4 establishes the Coastal Policy Board, which is comprised of four commissioners, which are the Natural Resources, Environmental Conservation, Fish and Game, and Commerce, and you include five public members from the other 28 coastal management districts. We know the commissioners are appointed by the governor, and under this legislation, the five public members will be appointed by the governor. So this setup is certainly made to allow the state of Alaska to keep a steady hand on the activities of the Coastal Policy Board. Prior to the dramatic program change of 2003, the old Coastal Policy Council was made up of commissioners and local district residents, performed its duty satisfactorily. There have been no projects that have been delayed or canceled because of the action of the council. In 2003, the Department of Natural Resources has not dealt successfully with the issue of genuine participation by district residents in decision-making of their areas and development, nor has it dealt with the negative morale issues which persist in the coastal policy arena. A months-long process last summer and fall failed to address needed changes to the Alaska Coastal Management Plan. It appears that the Department of Natural Resources has discovered that you cannot regulate your way to inclusiveness. Residents of coastal management districts throughout Alaska are disenfranchised by the very process that governs development activities in their home regions. I know of no other coastal residents in the whole United States that are treated like stepchildren like we are. To that, Madam Chairman, I hand off to my staff member, Tim Benintendi, to see if you have any questions and further presentation of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Mr. Benintendi, would you like to add anything on the record?
Yes, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. As was stated, Senate Bill 4 would establish a Alaska Coastal Policy Board. Major changes in the ACMP program from 2003 eliminated the old Coastal Policy Council and shifted authority over permit review, compliance, and consistency matters solely to the Department of Natural Resources. A new board would have, among other things, the authority to approve district management plans, approve regulations developed by DNR, approve program changes, apply for and accept grants and other monies, evaluate the effectiveness of district management plans, and settle disputes. The concentration of decision-making into too few hands in the Department of Natural Resources had left many to view the court system as the only source of remedy for development project reviews, which are too abbreviated and non-inclusive. We would hate to see financial resources diverted for such actions unnecessarily, and moreover, a California court would likely be the determining panel for issues which could be addressed here in state. In defending the current ACMP program structure, the administration has cautioned against changes which will make the program more cumbersome and costly for project developers. To date, we have not seen a roster of specific development projects which have been halted, delayed, or made more costly because of the old policy council, and of course that would lend to an active discussion and deliberations and help the progress of this issue greatly towards some kind of resolution. After 2003, regulations adopted by DNR severely limited, if not eliminated, the ability of coastal districts to establish enforceable policies regarding the eventual effects of development on coastal resources and uses. Authority for local enforceable policy determination is restored under Senate Bill 4. Also in this bill, subsistence usage is specifically identified as a value within the ACMP objectives. The so-called DEC carve-out is eliminated in this bill. The carve-out basically said that a permit issued by DEC for a project is automatically considered consistent within the ACMP requirements and therefore requires no further process. That would be removed under this legislation. The bill provides for special management areas authority over development inland from the coastal area if there should be significant impact to the coastal zone, and inclusion of activities in federal lands and waters, including the Outer Continental Shelf. The bill so would also address seismic survey activity and would make each lease sale subject to an individual consistency review. Despite a well-publicized outreach process last summer and fall by ACMP personnel, no progress has been made to bring district interests into the fold. And anticipated improved legislation from the administration will not now be forthcoming. The ACMP put out a very nice calendar last fall. If I may read just a passage from its inside cover. The quote is, "We intend to strengthen the ACMP as a state program that will benefit applicants and the public in the coordination of projects that will enhance coastal district participation when reviewing activities occurring in the coastal area and on the Outer Continental Shelf." Despite the best intentions of program personnel, such objectives have not been met. The program remains unpopular and divisive. And with no moderating legislation coming forth from the administration, Senate Bill 4 and its companion in the House, House Bill 74, offer an inclusive and viable alternative with a history of success based on the old program. And with that, I'll ask for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Benintendi. Can you give me, and Senator Sedman has joined us, give me an example of, if there is one that you want to highlight, of a policy that you feel, or an objective that you feel one of the coastal zones was unable to get through in the current process that was adopted in 03. So it's been in effect almost 6 years, this new method.
Well, I would say probably the chief item would be locally generated enforceable policies. Policies that local districts could manifest for themselves and have the support from either this board or the old Coastal Policy Board. That's probably the most important ingredient that is not currently part of the picture.
Okay. Further questions for Mr. Benintendi or Senator Olson? Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Benintendi, I would just ask you about, in the second paragraph of the sponsor statement, there's a sentence that concludes that paragraph that says, "So dramatic were the changes that the Federal Office of Oceans and Coastal Resource Management formally reviewed state actions for compliance and took 2 years to determine acceptance." Could you maybe articulate for the committee how that would have been different under a coastal zone management program, either as it existed prior to 2003 or under this bill?
Through the chair, Senator French, I probably cannot. The process by which the feds reviewed the changes, fairly dramatic changes in 2003, took that long to go through their review process. And I suspect that's probably on the upper edge of whatever would be considered a normal time limit. But beyond that, I don't have specific experience.
Thank you. And one other question, if I may, Madam Chair. I think I read where you are reducing the size of the panel from what it was. Yeah, I see it in the fourth paragraph. The new board would be much trimmer than the pre-2003 panel of 17 members. You're going from 17 down to 9. What other sort of major changes are you making from the program as it existed pre-2003 to the reintroduction of ACMP through this bill?
Madam Chairman, Senator French, the one that comes to mind is the provision for reviewing projects inland from the coastal area immediately. For example, a Red Dog mine is quite a bit upland, so to speak, from the coast, but it has direct impacts eventually on the coastal zone.
Thank you. And just last question. This is more rhetorical than directed at you, but it's going to be for both the proponents and the opponents of the bill. And I guess I'm looking for sort of, I was a big opponent of doing away with ACMP. I mean, it was very controversial. It was, you know, a big battle here in 2003, and I was opposed to doing away with it. Here we are 6 years later, and I guess what I'm looking for are specific examples of things that have happened in the areas that would have been under coastal zone management had it been in effect. Specific examples of things that, and maybe I should pose it to the proponents of the bill, specific examples of things that went wrong that would have been fixed, in your view, had an ACMP plan been in effect. So sort of a global question, but am I making myself clear?
Madam Chairman, yes, sir. Senator French, I think several of the people who would testify today can articulate very specific occurrences better than I, but there are a host, yes.
And then thank you very much. That's all I have.
Hey. Madam Chairman, if I could answer that question, just something that comes to mind right away has to do with all the seismic activity that's going on in the Chukchi and the Beaufort Sea. Obviously, there's been a fair amount of concern that's been falling on deaf ears because of the lack of input they've had from the local whalers that are up on the North Slope. It's not that they haven't been trying to get their voice out. It's just that the lack of attentiveness that has gone on and the feeling of being the redheaded stepchild that's out there. And so that's one thing that comes to mind right away. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Olson, do you think if we had something like this in place, the coastal management plan, where local communities had more input, that we could possibly see more development because the local communities would be more involved from the start and be able to have more of a say right from the start as opposed to kind of locking in and just opposing because they're not getting their voices heard?
Madam Chairman, I totally agree with you. If you've got people at the table that at least get their voices heard, even though there may be a majority of people that are there that will opt for development, I think that's where the frustration comes, that they're not even at the table. While, and if you look at the pre-2003, 30 years before that to 1973, and you look up on the North Slope, and you see the amount of development activity that's happened under the old program, I mean, programs went along very well. And then all of a sudden in 2003, you know, when the legislation was chopped off, then there was no input, and that's what has caused the frustration. And I think what's more important is that there seems to be a lack of ambition on the side of the department to come. They'll say they're going to do it. Nothing's happened for the last, how many, 6 years that we've been in there? And then there's been a disenchantment with that. And I think that what has happened is that there's so much going on within the Department of Natural Resources with the natural gas pipeline, the offshore stuff that's going on, that you just don't have time to address something that is so important to the people that live in that right in that area. And that's why there has been this frustration and the call for us to go ahead and put in a bill to make it so that they can feel like they have a seat at the table.
Senator Olson, when I look at the membership, it looks like you have 5 members from the coastal districts and 4 commissioners. And I would just like to hear a little bit about what the thought process is in that. And I worry if you have a situation where you'll always have 5-4 in terms of votes.
Well, first of all, whenever you have a 5-4 situation, obviously you're not going to have a tie vote, assuming everybody's there. There's going to be some type of consensus where a majority of people are there. Commissioners, as busy as they are, they'll probably have designees at these meetings. And the commissioners, you know, for that matter, won't even be from necessarily coastal districts. But if you have people that are intimately involved where either their district, the district next to them, or can they can identify with those people that are having development going on, or you live on the ocean. I mean, let's face it, somebody from Chalkeetsuk or in the interior, Arctic Village or Caltag, you know, you don't have the same appreciation for being out on the coastal areas like you do that somebody from Unalakleet or Hooper Bay, where you've got the rising tides, you know, the smell of salt water, and you could even see it down here in southeast Alaska, that you've got the idea that, you know, you've got a different mentality for those people that are on the coast as opposed to those that are up the river.
And just on that point, if I could just, I guess, you know, this issue was a very controversial, hotly debated, emotional on both sides, and at least as I participated in it and the other body, I didn't hear disrespect for either philosophy, just kind of different ways of viewing the world. And my only, as we walk through these hearings, my only question, you know, is the idea that you have a state constitution that puts the resources in the hands of the state. And when you do have a coastal board that ends up with that fifth vote, I think the tendency would be to support whatever the initiative is impacting that particular board member that you know of. And I worry that we get away from data and facts and some of the science and things that has to underlie a state like ours that is a resource development state. And so that was my question there, is whether you put yourself in a situation where, you know, if Senator Wilikowski and Senator French and I are each coastal zone policy board members, and Senator French says people in my district are concerned about it, I'm likely to back them up. And I just worry that, you know, the folks who are the commissioners who are representing, you know, the data from DNR and Fish and Game and DEC, and the economic impacts, their votes are more minimized in that process.
Tim Benettini has a better answer than I do. He needs more experience in that area as well.
Mr. Benettini.
A second string answer, Madam Chairman. It's my observation that given this coastal policy board, you have four commissioners who are appointed by the governor, and all five of the public members would be appointed by the governor. I think there could be a case made that there'd be a lot less contention with a board like that than under the present circumstance. The governor certainly has all the latitude, but I want to emphasize, too, just in the time I've been involved with this issue, I've discovered that there are a lot of responsible, development-oriented folks out in those districts, and it's not, I just wish it weren't a we and they circumstance. Yeah. So I think a board such as is proposed in this legislation would go a long way to reduce that contention.
Fair enough. Okay, further questions. Senator Huggins.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Olson, when you were looking at putting this bill forward, did you look at any other techniques besides the board as a major technique to address the issue that potentially might also offer up some ways to gain resolution?
Well, actually what happened was that we looked at it historically to see what had happened before when the council was in place, and then to see what kind of effect it had, as well as satisfying both sides of the development and the subsistence side. And I think the board was by far the most, I think, open to all sides that are around there. And I'm not sure that's so much controversial as to what's going on. It's more the coming together with a decision-making mind so that you go forward with everybody that's involved to us. There or has some type of representation there, as opposed to one bureaucrat or a group of bureaucrats that are making all the decisions. And with all due respect to bureaucrats, we need them, but sometimes they're fairly frustrating to work with.
No, I understand.
And that's one of the reasons I ran for office. Then I become a bureaucrat.
That's why we like you. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair.
In addition to being a pilot, a doctor, and a lawyer. So anything further for Senator Olson or Mr. Benettini? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you just address the issue of subsistence a little bit more? How does this bill deal with subsistence where the current situation does not?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, it simply makes more formal the fact that the subsistence activities in the coastal districts are a value that the ACMP or that this board would take more formally under consideration. It's one of the issues out there that is always felt to be under some kind of stress. And so this just formalizes that it would be a value to be considered in the process at several levels, I would guess.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Tim. Okay, I'm going to go down the line here. Mr. Johnny Aiken. And again, I don't mean to be rude.
So don't be.
That's right. That's good. You just put your name and your who you'd like to be associated with on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Johnny Aiken, and I'm with the North Slope Borough. And I am the planning director for the North Slope Borough, and I have about 11 years of experience with the Coastal Management Program. Madam Chair, I will begin by talking about how Senate Bill 4 improves the Coastal Management Program, and then I will address some misconceptions about the bill. Senate Bill 4 would accomplish four major things. It would restore the ability of coastal districts to establish meaningful, enforceable policies, improve district and agency participation, bring air and water quality back into the coastal management program, and restore the state's rights. I will also add that this bill, if passed, will restore our faith in the state government processes. District enforceable policies provide the foundation for the Alaska Coastal Management Program. They address local concerns while allowing development. DNR assured the legislature in 2003 that districts would retain the ability to have enforceable policies, but when approving district plans, the rules kept changing, and it denied most policies. For example, all of our proposed policies for subsistence, habitat, mining, and oil and gas were disapproved. Last year, DNI testified that its regulations were more stringent than intended by the legislature, yet it has no concrete plans to fix this problem. The 2003 legislation eliminated all checks and balances when it concentrated all decision-making power into DNR. Senate Bill 4 would restore the partnership originally envisioned for the Coastal Management Program by reestablishing a Coastal Policy Board that represents districts and state agencies. Districts are an important part of the Alaska Coastal Management Program because they fulfill the goal of the Article 10 of the Constitution for maximum local self-government. Senate Bill 4 would bring air and water quality back into the Coastal Management Program, removing DEC permits from the consistency review process was a bold experiment. But it just hasn't worked. Even DNR proposed to eliminate the DEC carve-out in the draft legislation it released last November. Senate Bill 4 would restore state rights. Current practices limit rights given to the state under the Federal Coastal Zone Management Act. There has been a lot of misconception or misinformation about Senate Bill 4. So I'd like to set the record straight on three issues. First, we hear a lot of talk about how the Coastal Management Program has stopped or delayed projects. In practice, the Alaska Coastal Management Program is a development program. It gives state agencies and coastal districts an opportunity to promote development while minimizing those impacts associated with development. Alaska coastal communities desperately need development, and the Alaska Coastal Management Program provides an excellent way to resolve issues early in the process. This coordination helps prevent permit delays and lawsuits. I don't know of a single North Slope project that was ever denied through the Alaska Coastal Management Program. Prior to 2003, less than 1% of all projects within the entire state were appealed. Citizen appeals are no longer allowed, so this figure would even be even lower under Senate Bill 4. I've included a map in my handout, which I hope you got, that shows all of the oil and gas activities on the North Slope. Most of these projects were approved prior to 2003, so clearly the Alaska Coastal Management Program has not stopped development.
Mr. Aiken, my apologies to you. If I could have you wrap up, just to be fair to the other folks testifying, and if we could kindly have a copy of your testimony to include in our record, we'd appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. So briefly, I'd just like to say that the North Slope Borough depends on development for its revenue, and we're not in the business of trying to stop development. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Aiken. Questions? Okay, thank you. Next, we're going to go to Marilyn Crockett.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marilyn Crockett. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. As you know, because all of oil and gas activities currently occurring in the state happen along the coastal zone, AOGA has clearly been very actively involved in debate since 1977, when the program was first enacted, with regard to this program. So it's within that spirit of being involved in the process that we're presenting these comments today. Over that 30-year period, there's obviously been a very significant evolution of environmental programs and regulations. Because of that, in the late 1990s and early 2000s, it became clear that the coastal zone management program that Alaska had in place had become unmanageable in terms of process and scope, which led to confusion, misinterpretations, and delays in processing of permits, oftentimes without any additional environmental protection or environmental benefit over the existing laws and regulations that were on the books. The revisions to the program that were enacted by the legislature in 2003 resolved these challenges and transformed the program into one that provides certainty for the state, local districts, and the regulated community. Unfortunately, the legislation before you today eliminates that certainty, and I'll talk about just a couple in the interest of time. The first is the DEC carve-out. And that's probably one of the most problematic provisions of this bill. The provision in existing law implements the original intent of the ACMP that these standards and permits administered by the state are inherently consistent with the program, and therefore the additional steps of securing a consistency determination aren't necessary or required. These standards have been developed over a very, very long period of time with technical experts and have been implemented through permits that are very comprehensive and carry with them statutory and regulatory requirements for extensive public comment, the time periods for which fall outside of the ACMP review schedules. The DEC carve-out in no way diminishes a coastal district's opportunity to comment and provide input on a specific DEC permit application. I'll move on now to creation of a Coastal Policy Board. We're concerned about the establishment of the Coastal Policy Board and the extensive responsibilities that are vested with this entity. The entity has the ability, as mentioned, to approve all district programs and enforceable policies, changes to boundaries, and so on. DNR may still adopt the regulations, but only after approval of the board, which we think will end up in endless back and forth between the board and the DNR as DNR carries out its APA procedures with regard to adoption of regulations. Further, it's our view that experience under the previous Coastal Policy Council demonstrates that insertion of a board into this process, in fact, lengthens the time the time for processing of the program, given the infrequency of meetings. I'll wrap up, Madam Chairman. One of the other things that I do want to mention, however, is the predictability of timelines. Permit timeliness is absolutely critical to any permitting entity, whether it's oil and gas, whether it's mining, whether it's a home builder. You absolutely need those timelines in place. The bill before you today eliminates the timelines for federally permitted activities or federally permitted actions. This is going to impact not only oil and gas, because everything that we do requires a federal permit. It also could be something, frankly, as simple as installing a pad in a coastal community where that developer needs to have a 404 permit from the Corps of Engineers. So that deadline for action of a consistency determination on that federal permit is eliminated in this bill, and I wanted to draw that to your attention because we think that that's very serious. In the interest of time, Madam Chairman, I'll go ahead and conclude my testimony a little bit beyond the 3 minutes. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Marilyn. And if you'd be willing to submit that testimony.
I've submitted it to the committee.
Great. Thank you. Questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next, Randy Bates.
Good afternoon. My name is Randy Bates. I'm the director of the Division of Coastal and Ocean Management, which is within the Department of Natural Resources. Madam Chair, Co-Chair Wilikowski, Vice Chair Huggins, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today, and thank you for bringing up this coastal management bill and the issues that are important. I'm here to testify this afternoon on behalf of the department. I would appreciate you accepting my testimony as such. The department does not support Senate Bill 4. The department has two substantive concerns with Senate Bill 4. Number one, it creates a new oversight body, the Coastal Policy Board, and it vests that body with the ability to approve coastal district enforceable policies that would override agency authority, effectively rendering the legislative establishment of laws relative to resource management and protection moot. Number two, it is a bill specific to the issues of a group of ACMP participants, but it is not a bill that balances or represents the interest of all ACMP participants and stakeholders. Although I've rendered the department concerns into these two main issues, the department does have additional and specific concerns with the Senate bill. But I'll hold off on those concerns at this point. Since the changes in 2003, we have implemented a coastal program that respects the existing state and federal agency authorities, that allows coastal districts to supplement that authority, that solicits and involves the coastal district input and perspective, and that balances a developing economy with the protection of the coastal uses and resources. The department fully recognizes that there is a significant difference of opinion on how successful that implementation since 2003 has been, how much influence coastal districts have regarding state permitting decisions, and what improvements could be made to the coastal program to strengthen it. To date, while the department does believe that some change to the coastal program is necessary, we have not concluded that statutory change is necessary nor warranted. The department believes that the voice, input, perspective, and influence of rural Alaska and the coastal communities are critical to our function as a department and as a state. The ACMP is one of many programs that offers that input and influence. The department values that input. It values that input, but we do not believe that that input that we solicit should allow a coastal district to control, dictate, or otherwise replace the state's decision-making process on those issues that are important to the state and the, and its collective residents. And this is the fundamental concern that the department has with Senate Bill 4. It allows the coastal district enforceable policies to be more restrictive, more stringent, more prescriptive, by allowing them to rephrase, redefine, and otherwise modify the standards and authority of the resource agencies. But it allows the districts to write policies without the science that may be required by a state or federal agency, and also without the enforcement capability of whatever it is the district wants to be able to write an enforceable policy about. Senate Bill 4 changes the structure and substance of the coastal program significantly. The department, the coastal districts, and the sponsor of the bill are not in agreement on the role and authority of the coastal districts. And this is largely the reason for our opposition to the Senate Bill 4, and certainly accounts for our statement that we could not reach consensus nor conclusion on what changes could be made to the ACMP statutes. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Thank you for taking time to listen to this issue.
Thank you very much, Randy. Questions? Senator Wilikowski, then Wagner, then French.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. We, my office asked you last week to, if you could get together some examples of how, of development projects that were slowed down or adversely impacted financially from the consistency review process. And do you have those with you today?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, we did not put forward a package of examples for you. Of course, any time we put forward a package of examples that might show how a project was delayed or increased cost, there's always reasons why there's rationale for it. That's not to say it hasn't happened. That's not to say it has happened. I believe the question is probably more appropriately addressed or asked of the industry whose projects are the ones that are proposed. I'd be happy to continue working on this, see if we can come up with some examples. It would, any project example we may give is going to include at least a fair page of caveats as to what happened, why it happened, what it meant, and all of that additional information. But certainly we can continue to look at that for you.
Thank you.
Senator Wagner.
Randy, you know, 3 years ago, I guess, we were in the middle of rewrites of district plans. And last year, some of those plans were still incomplete. Are they complete now? Or do you still have some hanging out there that are incomplete?
Senator Wagner, through the chair, there are 28 coastal districts that actively worked on plan revisions. There are 25 of those district plans that are now in place. We have approved them. They've been filed with the federal granting agency, and they're in effect. There are three plans that are still outstanding. Those plans include the North Slope Borough, the Northwest Arctica Borough, and the Bering Straits Coastal Resource Service Area.
Thank you.
Senator Terrio has joined us. Senator French and then Huggins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for you, Mr. Bates. You said you had two major reasons, or the administration had several reasons, but one of the major reasons for opposing the bill was that it, in essence, allows the Coastal Zone Management Board to override DNR. I see in the sectional analysis supplied by Senator Olson, in, you know, Section 3, perhaps Section 9 would be evidence of your argument. Are there other sections that you want to specifically point to as places where the board would be able to override DNR?
Senator French, through the chair, sections from our read, sections 9 and 14 substantially change the authority and purview of coastal district enforceable policies. Those would be the sections we focused on.
9 and 14. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Randy, under the present system, how do the coastal zone communities, how do they, in what mechanism do they provide input to you as a decision-making body? How does that happen?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, the structure of the coastal program has not changed since it was enacted in 1979. We have a networked coastal program that relies on the implementation through our sister agencies, being Mining, Land and Water, Habitat, Fish and Game, Department of Environmental Conservation. We've also got a local implementation technique, which is the coastal district role. The coastal districts, during the consistency review processes, which is akin to a permitting process, coastal districts have the opportunity to review a project, comment on that project, and we modify the project as appropriate based on those comments. They have had the opportunity to comment. They retain the opportunity to comment, and nothing has changed in that regard. The issue at hand is whether they have district enforceable policies that they can apply or not. It's an issue of who has control to determine compliance of the project.
Madam Chair, follow up.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. Just to follow up, then, I guess I'm thinking of DOT as an example, but normally there is a requirement for public hearings or meetings. Is that part of the process? I'm asking you questions. I have no idea what the answer is, so bear with me.
No, Senator Huggins, through the chair. Under the Federal Coastal Zone Management Act, the public process is very important, very critical. It's a cornerstone, a foundation of coastal management nationwide. Alaska obviously complies with federal law, and with every consistency review that we conduct, there is a public process provided that allows coastal districts, state agencies, other residents of the state to comment on those projects.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, further questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, next, Terry Camery.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs McGuire and Wielakowski. My name is Terry Camery. I'm a planner with the City and Borough of Juneau. I've been involved in the Coastal Management Program since 2000, so seen us go through a long variety of changes the last 8-9 years here. I want to start off by stating the City and Borough of Juneau does support this bill. The bill restores the district role by allowing districts to establish meaningful, enforceable policies. It brings back some basic checks and balances through the Coastal Policy Board and brings back DEC into the review process. I want to start off by clarifying just a couple of points about what the bill does not do. I would respectfully disagree with DNR. The bill does not in any way override state authority. The Coastal Policy Board, for one, does not conduct project reviews. The Coastal Policy Board will approve district coastal management program local district coastal management programs, approve regulations, and approve the grant program, but it will not conduct project reviews. Furthermore, it's really important to note that districts under this bill cannot write policies that are preempted by state or federal law. That's a critical point. I believe DNR has implied otherwise. It was clearly stated in this bill. Local districts cannot write policies preempted by state or federal law, and they cannot write policies that interfere with an issue of state concern. So that's a very clear distinction. I don't think it's the wish of any district to interfere with state authority and to override that. That would be bad public policy across the board. So I think it's a real gross exaggeration to say that the provisions in this bill push local control. Every policy that a district pushes forward has to be thoroughly scientifically documented. You'd never get it pushed through otherwise, no matter what the makeup of the Coastal Policy Board would be. And with that, I want to back up just for a minute and discuss the ACMP as a management tool for local communities. Coastal management is used for a variety of purposes, to establish areas that are set aside for development as well as protection. Juneau, for example, has special waterfront areas, and these are areas with lower habitat standards that we have pushed through the Coastal Management Program specifically for development of our waterfront, for our cruise ship docks, for local seafood processing plants, for our marine cargo areas. We also have the Juneau Wetland Management Plan, which categorized low-value wetlands and gave them far less restrictive policies to really actively promote development in those low-value wetland areas. With that, I want to back up again for a brief review of what happened in 2003. As you've heard over and over again, the district role was drastically reduced in 2003. In the case of the Juneau Coastal Management Program, our plan was reduced from 99 policies to 16, and that was after a lengthy period of mediation. To give just one other example, I believe Anchorage was reduced from 100 to 5. Every district, oh boy, I'm up already. I had a lot more I wanted to say, but I went on a little too long about state authority. I will just close, I guess, by saying that it's really a shame that nothing came out of the reevaluation effort. We went through a really lengthy process, a really strong good faith effort put forth by districts as well as industry this fall. And it's really a shame that nothing has resulted from that. We recently had the statewide coastal management conference here in Juneau, March 3rd through the 5th. And I think it speaks volumes to note that the ACMP reevaluation effort was not even on the agenda of a three-day conference. So there's no sign of DNR going forward with changes, and that's why this bill is before you today. So thank you for your time, and I'm sorry if I went on a little too much.
Okay, thank you, Terry. Questions? Okay, thank you for your testimony. Okay, next we're going to go to Cordova, to Mayor Tim Jones.
Madam Chairman, and members of the Resource Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Tim Jones, I'm Mayor of the City of Cordova. SB 4 addresses issues raised by the Coastal Management Zone Planners at the ACMP workshop in December of 2008 in Anchorage. This bill will establish the Coastal Policy Board and allow coastal districts to have local input into policies as long as they're not specifically barred by state or federal law. And I just am here today to support this bill. I think this is the direction of the state of Alaska needs to go to allow its local residents to have input in local policies. I don't want to go on with a lot of testimony, so I'll just keep it short and leave it at that. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Questions? Okay, next we'll stay in the Cordova LAO and go to Jennifer Gibbons.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Gibbons, and I'm the Executive Director of the Prince William Sound Keeper. And I'd like to thank the co-chairs and the committee for the opportunity to speak. I'm speaking in support of SB 4. I appreciate the bill and the efforts behind it. And it's good to see someone endeavoring to do what DNR was supposed to do. SB 4 restores the authority to local government. It helps local governments develop enforceable policies, and it brings DEC back into the process. Now, while I support the bill, it does fall short of realizing a comprehensive policy. And I was one of the participants in the 6 to 8 month stakeholder process led by DNR. We still have not solved the problem of how DNR implements the program. And I'd like to suggest one thing that might help in that direction, and that would be that statewide standards are written into the statute so that we can assure that DNR implements the program in a manner true to the legislative intent behind the bill. Secondly, we still have not restored the citizens' rights to judicial review, and this is critical. And while SB 4 does give local governments much more control, local governments cannot always represent the interests of the public. And the third item that's a bit of a disappointment is that still we haven't elevated subsistence to the level of a stated priority within the program, and this is very disappointing for all Alaskans, particularly Native Alaskans who depend upon subsistence. Not only for their livelihood, but for their culture. And lastly, as a participant in the stakeholder process led by DNR, I would like to express my frustration. This process was demanded by the legislature in hopes of restoring the ACMP, and many of us invested enormous levels of time and expense to participate over a 6 to 8 month period. And we hoped for and believed in the potential for a positive outcome from the process, but I can only describe it as utterly frustrating. Now, I would like to say with respect to Randy Bates and the staff who are leading the process, I don't think that this is simply a staff issue. I think we need to look at the directives that were given to the staff. And I'd just like to repeat that. We really need to look at the directives that were given by the staff, because we've had this problem before, and now we've had it again. I have some doubts that a comprehensive ACM policy can be realized within the DNR, but I think this bill is important. It's actually tangible progress on this issue. And again, want to express my thanks for everyone who worked to bring this bill forward. And to all of you in Juneau, you're very lucky to have Terry Cameron. She's great, and I enjoyed getting to know her through this process. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to the Kenai LAO and Gary Williams.
Madam Chair and members of the Senate Resources Committee, my name is Gary Williams. I am the Kenai Peninsula Bureau Coastal District Coordinator. I want to offer a few prepared comments in support of Senate Bill 4, and I will try to stay within the time limit. First, the reinstitution of a coastal policy board as provided in Section 1 as a means to offer a modest level of oversight to the Alaska Coastal Management Program is a positive step. The legislation adopted in 2003 placed the program in DNR and provided too little flexibility in the law to accommodate the differing needs of our coastal areas. Without an oversight board, there's no opportunity for coastal districts to appeal agency decisions when there is disagreement over the interpretation of statutes and DNR regulations. This was a problem common to all districts during the rewrite of coastal district plans as required by HB 191. Second, the proposed language on page 7, lines 14 through 23 provides valuable guidance on the development of coastal management plan enforceable policies. This provision is important if coastal districts are to have a meaningful role in the effective implementation of the Alaska Coastal Management Program. At present, DNR disallows coastal district policy that touch upon any activity regulated by federal or state agencies, whether or not that agency effectively monitors or enforces the regulated activity. State agencies seem to fear that by giving coastal districts enforceable policy in areas the state has regulatory authority, that they will be giving their authority away. Now, that is not what coastal districts seek in this proposed change. We seek only to implement the objectives of the Alaska Coastal Management Program as clearly delineated in state statute. And these objectives are described on page 8, beginning on line 27 of SB 4. Within those objectives are recognition of the need for energy development, commercial and industrial enterprise development, and orderly, balanced utilization and protection of our resources. The guidance in this bill will provide for a meaningful local input. It's important to note that in the more than 20 years of partnership, coastal districts have not used the ACMP to stop projects. Third, the proposed language on page 13, lines 9 and 10 is extremely important in the implementation of a resource management program. This language calls for consideration of the impacts of activities that would cause direct and significant impact to coastal uses or to resources. Under current law, a coastal district cannot consider the cumulative impact of activities that would cause damage to a resource if the activity occurs outside the boundaries of coastal resources. The effect is, for example, an activity in an upland that has a clear potential to damage a nearby wetland may not be considered in a district's consistency review. The proposed language in this section must be part of any rational management program. Finally, a general comment. The Kenai Peninsula Bureau Coastal Program is part of the Kenai River Center, a multi-agency, one-stop permitting entity within the borough, state, and federal resource managers working together to process permit applications and to manage compliance. When we disagree, we talk. We talk to find a way that an applicant's project can be accomplished consistent with good land stewardship. It's a process and a relationship that works. But what we've come to know is that bright lines of authority and responsibility don't always exist. And so it's valuable to have a certain amount of overlap in regulations. It is also important that this legislation requires to be inclusive in interagency and intergovernmental relationships and to require us to communicate our common concerns and understandings. And if in crafting this legislation, you facilitate local and state entities to work together as partners, as the statutes intend, to ensure the development and resource protection are in balance, you'll have produced some fine legislation. And I believe that this bill is a firm step in that direction. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity to comment today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Anchorage LAO and Lindsay Walter with the Department of Law. It says you're available for questions. Is that still the case? Just questions?
That's correct.
Okay. And Paul Laird.
Senators McGuire and Willikowski, members of the Senate Resources Committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Paul Laird, and I'm general manager and testifying on behalf of the Alaska Support Industry Alliance. We urge you to oppose Senate Bill 4 relating to Alaska's Coastal Management Program. As you know, the program was reformed in 2003 to address inconsistencies, ambiguities, and time-consuming redundancies that hampered resource development projects and discouraged investment. The reforms have worked without compromising environmental standards. If it's fixed, don't break it. The Alliance's growing membership now includes more than 460 organizations that provide goods and services to Alaska's oil, gas, and mining industries. The industries whose investments not only are the backbone of our state's economy, but also are the most susceptible to the regulatory roadblocks embodied in Senate Bill 4. Our members and their 35,000-plus Alaska employees, your constituents, already are suffering the effects of reduced investment driven by the global economic downturn, lower oil prices, and an uncompetitive state tax structure for oil and gas. Hundreds of Alaska workers in the industry have been laid off from their jobs in recent weeks. Thousands more are vulnerable. Margins of Alaska contractors and suppliers also are being squeezed as oil companies seek to reduce operating and capital costs. Please don't jeopardize even more Alaska jobs and businesses by recreating regulatory and permitting obstacles in the coastal management program and making Alaska an even less attractive place to invest. We urge you to just say no to Senate Bill 4. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator French.
Actually, not for Mr. Laird, but for the Department of Law, that's okay.
Lindsay Walter.
Yes.
Lindsay, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, and off mute.
Okay. Senator French has
a
question.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Ms. Walters, my question is about the provisions of SB 4 that could arguably be said to allow some kind of local override of DNR. I can see in Section 9 that there's a reference to a plan that's more, you know, stricter or more specific than a state or federal statute, and so I can see the argument there. But turning to Section 14, could you give me your view about whether this section allows for a coastal zone management plan adopted under this bill to override DNR?
Senator French, through the chair, let me just quickly look at Section 14 here. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Section 19 and Section 14 really kind of go hand in hand, and the board under Section 14 would not be able to approve any policies that didn't also meet the requirements that are under Section 9. So while there's not language in Section 14 speaking specifically to what happens if enforceable policies are stricter or more specific on the state or federal statutes, that would still have to be addressed because of Section 9. Does that answer your question?
let me see if I can state it back to you. You're saying that Section 14 allows for the implementation of plans crafted under 9 that may contain provisions stricter than state law. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct.
And just let me, if I may, Madam Chair, just one more question. Wouldn't that view hold in any instance where you had a lower governmental body with an ordinance or a law or anything else that was stricter than the governmental body above it? Couldn't you say that that's in essence the borough or the city overriding the state if it had a 35 mile an hour speed limit where the state would have allowed a 45 or something along those lines?
Senator French, through the chair. Yes, it could be seen as similar to that. Those kinds of things that are done through municipal codes are not applied to things in the OCS or projects that could affect activities that are going on just outside of the coastal zone and that could affect the coastal zone. And the coastal management program, as you know, is a federally granted program to the state, and we try to maintain some consistency from district to district. And certainly if the local districts would like to get more stringent, a very good way to do it is through their municipal code.
Further questions? Okay, next we'll go to Bud Cassidy with the Kodiak Island Borough.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the board. Can you hear me first?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the residents of Kodiak and those who support SB 4. I'm Bud Cassidy. I'm the director of the Community Development Department. And my statements really are based on Kodiak being one of the largest and most diversified commercial fishing ports in the nation. Resources found along our coastline and nurtured by inland waters are critically important to our economic well-being, as well as our physical and social well-being through subsistence uses of the resource. Equally critical for our economy is the development of a vibrant processing industry, as well as transportation industry, both of which are built along the coast. Kodiak's past experience with the Alaska Coastal Management Plan is that we have found that commercial fishing, subsistence, and development can and do coexist and in fact support each other after meaningful dialogue. I want to testify on behalf of a community who is most familiar with the workings of the older coastal management program. We found that it worked well. It was a program that encouraged local input. It was a program that sought coordination between local entities and state agencies. It really enfranchised the residents and fishermen of Kodiak. We feel that the collaboration between agencies with their expertise, along with the local knowledge, reduces conflicts and impacts and just makes for better decisions, and they're generally accepted by both parties. But the key word is coordinate, and that's one of the things that I don't see in the current program to a large degree. I found that many of our citizens, in fact, have become disengaged from the coastal management program and process. Some of the reasons, I think, is because under the existing program, our community has been relegated to a very limited role. We once had a community who were keenly aware of the program, and in fact, one of our elected officials was on the Coastal Policy Council. We may not, as residents, have the expertise to determine water and air quality, nor know the science behind managing fish and game resources, but there is local expertise, I would submit, a local experience that should be considered and included when decisions are made. Madam Chairman, our Borough Assembly supports SB 4 and has adopted Borough Resolution 2009-21 that states that we in Kodiak are in favor of SB 4, that we are in favor of a balanced approach with public participation and agency expertise in the decision-making process. We are in favor of the role of the new Coastal Policy Board, the way that it is structured in SB 4. We think that the other changes in SB 4 go a long way to improving what is currently in place. Madam Chairman, that is my testimony, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions? Okay, next we're going to go to Marlene Campbell in Sitka.
Yes, Co-Chair McGuire and members of the Senate Resources Committee, I'm Marlene Campbell,
I've been the coastal management coordinator for City and Borough of Sitka since 1987. I have submitted written testimony, somewhat more detailed, as well as a copy of the Sitka Assembly's resolution supporting this legislation to enable us as coastal communities to more effectively participate in the Alaska Coastal Management Program. Prior to the ACMP revisions in 2003, the Sitka Coastal Management Program had been a model of effective coastal management, allowing the Sitka community to have due deference and protect local resources and activities while permitting responsible development. As a result of the revision process and forced complete revision of the Sitka Coastal Plan, Sitka lost more than half of its enforceable policies and its seat at the table for permits and management decision-making affecting coastal communities, since most of our policies were so restricted they no longer applied in permit reviews. Senate Bill 4 and House Bill 74 will restore the opportunity for this seat at the table in management decision-making affecting the coastal zone of the City and Borough of Sitka by establishing a reasonably sized coastal policy board that will participate in Sitka management plan approvals, permit reinstatement of locally generated enforceable policies. With high-level representation on the board of both agencies and coastal districts, plan approvals and coastal grant awards will represent all interests and more of a coordinated review rather than a unilateral decision by only DNR Division of Coastal and Ocean Management. This legislation will also streamline project reviews through the inclusion of air and water quality issues and the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation in the review process rather than separately through the DEC carve-out, which from our perspective has been dysfunctional. The legislature will always be able to maintain its legislative authority over the ACMP program and retain its ability to pass future ACMP legislation. In conclusion, the revisions of the ACMP have been devastating to the formerly strong and effective Sitka Coastal Program. Senate Bill 4 and House Bill 74 is a great step forward to reinstate some of the best features of the coastal management program in our state. I thank the sponsors for this legislation, and I also thank you members of the committee for the opportunity to support its passage.
Thank you very much. Okay, next we're going to go to Barrett Ristroth with the North Slope Borough.
Good afternoon, Senators, and thank you for having me testify. This is Barrett Ristroth, and I'm with the North Slope Borough, and I've participated in mediation and ACMP's reevaluation over the last year. DNR testified that this bill would override the ability of the legislature to address natural resource issues, rendering your laws moot. But nothing in this bill is going to override legislative or agency authority because you, the legislator, have the power to determine which actions each agency will take with regard to state coastal management. The legislator can delegate its power under the Alaska Constitution to manage natural resources to DECOM through ACMP or to other agencies through other programs. DNR said that the bill would allow policies to be written without science, but the bill would require policies to be supported by scientific evidence or contemporary or traditional local knowledge that would justify the policies. The bill doesn't allow coastal districts to usurp any of the legislator's authority. The Alaska Constitution empowers municipalities to enact laws on matters of local concern, provided that these laws don't conflict with state and federal constitutions, and the bill doesn't change that. The DNR Council said that if municipalities wanted stricter laws, they would have to make them through their code and that they couldn't regulate the OCS. While with the exception of Alaska Statute 293520 dealing with extraterritorial jurisdiction, generally municipalities cannot use their municipal codes to regulate outside their bounds. This program, the Coastal Zone Management Act, is a unique chance for us to work together with the state and the federal government to work as part of a program as a partnership to do things that we wouldn't ordinarily do if we were just dealing with a municipal code. And I think that when the state says that we can't make policies dealing with, for example, marine mammals because the federal government would preempt us under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, the state is just ceding its own power to do something that the Coastal Zone Management Act would allow. In April 2007, DNR announced that it would reevaluate the ACMP, but it took over a year to initiate this process. and we really hoped that this would work out. We participated in every meeting, and we worked toward crafting a bill that we could agree on, but DNR chose not to continue the reevaluation. DNR stated that it was unable to obtain a consensus. At our conference in December, we asked DNR if it would submit legislation without a consensus. DNR indicated that even if there was a 99% consensus, this didn't mean that DNR would submit legislation based on this consensus to the legislator. The present bill may not have 99% consensus, but it strikes a balance between the pre-2003 ACMP and the ACMP that we have now. It will not stop development. As you heard, DNR was unable to come up with examples of how the previous ACMP had stopped development. The bill will not jeopardize Alaska jobs. The bill will streamline development of oil and gas resources, and it will allow Alaskans to preserve renewable resources, the fish and game on which they depend. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Barrett. And next we'll go to Noam and Jack Omalak.
Yes, greetings, Madam Chairman and members of the Senate Resource Committee. Greetings from Nome, Alaska. First of all, thanks for the opportunity to participate and in to help expedite the this public comment process, I'll simply read from a prepared statement. I represent Coweric Incorporated, which is the regional nonprofit for the Seward Peninsula, Bering Straits area. And we're in support of Senator Olson's SB4. Coweric Incorporated and the 20 regional villages we represent urge the Senate Resource Committee to vote for the passage of Senate Bill 4, which would reestablish the crucial process of increased local participation in the management policies of the Alaska Coastal Management Program. In the recent past, efforts to impart crucial and knowledgeable local information and concerns regarding coastal management strategies were often lost within the Department of Natural Resources Alaska Coastal Management Plan process. Unfortunately, local communities became disenfranchised by these inefficient policies and procedures. We believe that the establishment of a coastal policy board would alleviate some of the problems inherent to having a single agency oversee an overly large and intricate program. We also believe that local communities possess the right to have meaningful influence in the decision-making processes concerning the resources within their immediate management districts. The passage of SB 4 would effectively address such concerns. That's all I have. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Next, we'll go back to the off-nets and Theed Tobish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Theed Tobish. I'm a senior planner with the Municipality of Anchorage. I've worked with the Anchorage Coastal Plan since 1987. The municipality supports this bill, and you should also have a letter of support of the bill from our planning director in front of you. I'll try not to be repetitive here. The 2003 changes reduced the role of the municipality in coastal activities, especially in environmental permit reviews. We lost our ability to craft enforceable policies that were to be used to shape local projects and guide federal and state reviews. Our original coastal plan had 82 primary enforceable policies. The municipality extended considerable money and 2 years of staff time to develop a new plan that ended up with five rather generic policies, which, by the way, are hardly used at this point. Our old plan also incorporated an Anchorage Coastal Management Plan, the first of its kind in the country. This plan meant that its enforceable policies could be carried as conditions on state consistency findings, or especially core permits. The state's review was a vehicle for our policies. And it's safe to say that Anchorage could not and would not have developed the way it did in the boom years in the 80s and 90s without the policies that actually, in some cases, almost superseded federal regulations. We received a general permit, the first of its kind in the country, to facilitate development in wetlands. I'd like to give you an example of how the current changes have affected the municipality in a negative way. You may be aware of the ferry project. Our good neighbors from the Mattsu Valley are trying to put a ferry across Kinnick Arm with a landing on the Anchorage side, somewhere near Ship Creek. Our original plan had five or six policies that clearly would have assisted the Matsu in locating their ferry terminal in a location at the port of Anchorage. Instead, Matsu, without this guidance, has languished in over a year in trying to identify a landing site. And the site that they're currently working on is the site that the municipality does not support. Senate Bill 4 offers a simple and elegant fix to many of the problems you've heard today and over the past 3 years or longer. It addresses and resolves problematic sections of earlier legislation. These changes will allow coastal districts and communities around the state to customize enforceable policies in a way that maximizes local control and provides due deference. Districts will be guaranteed an active seat at the table during state and federal permit review. This is missing right now. The Coastal Policy Board will bring back a well-represented, almost adjudicatory-type body that balances the program's administration and decision-making. This bill better represents what Alaska wanted in its original program. It's what enabled Alaska communities to accept that original coastal management program. The municipality urges the committee to pass this bill on through the approval process. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Thede. Next up, Maureen McCray.
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank you all for the opportunity to speak in support of this bill. The SB4 redresses several significant problems in the current coastal program. My testimony will focus on three of them: the ability of coastal districts to have enforceable policies that address specific needs of their district, the return of DEC permits to the consolidated ACMP consistency review, and the formation of a coastal policy board. Some personal background: I've been actively involved in the Alaska coastal management since 1980. At that point, I was helping write some of the coastal programs for Woodward Clyde Consultants. From there, I went to work for the Minerals Management Service, working on consistency determinations, or for several years, just looking at potential conflicts between activities that might occur on the OCS and the Alaska Coastal Management Program. From there, I became a project review coordinator for the state's coastal program, and in 2003, was hired by the Corps of Engineers to help work with their regulatory program. Actually, my first awareness of Alaska's program was in the 1970s when a fellow graduate student at University of Washington delivered a paper. In that paper, he described the legislative reaction to the program first submitted. It was roundly rejected because it was so centralized. And at that point, I must admit, I was a little dismayed because I thought strong centralized programs were essential for good management. And it was adopted after the program was put back into a lot of the emphasis in the coastal districts. When I moved to the state in 1980, I realized the wisdom of that because Alaska's coastal area is so huge and the districts are so diverse. In 2003, the state legislature restructured the coastal program to centralize it again. However, the paperwork process remains, and what is missing are the district policies. And this was able to happen because coastal districts only receive deference in the interpretation of their own district policies. By denying most districts their policies, DNR was able to effectively diminish the deference that it needed to give to coastal districts. During the years I served as the state's conducted state's consistency reviews, I could always count on the municipality of Anchorage to provide substantive comments that facilitated good state decisions. During a recent conversation, you just heard Mr. Tobish say, Anchorage has gone from actively participating in reviews to essentially being a bystander. Their policies are so limited, there is very little that they can relate to. Judging from the discussions that I heard while attending the DNR attempts to revise the program, other districts have experienced the same lack of participation. I can personally attest to the dysfunctional results of removing the Department of Environmental Conservation permits from the coordinated review. Federal permits from the Corps of Engineers wetland program cannot be issued without both the DEC water quality certificate and the ACNP consistency decision. In the past, both decisions came together. With the revisions, that was no longer the case, and you could get the state's consistency determination and have no idea when the 401 certification was going to arrive.
Can I get you to wrap it up, Maureen?
Certainly. I support the creation of the board. Participants come from all areas and are able to reflect the diverse parts of the state. The decisions focus only on those of policy, not day-to-day. So I do support SB4, provides an effective district voice to the diverse coastal area, restores DEC to the integrated review process, and establishes a policy board to ensure balanced decisions. And I do thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Okay, thank you. We've reached 5 o'clock, and we still have a number of people who are online. And I apologize to those who did not get an opportunity to testify, but there is a lot of public interest in this. So we're going to hold public testimony open until a future hearing date, and we will revisit this topic and give people an opportunity to call back in or go back to their LAOs. And with that, it's a little after 5. We're adjourned.